All right, guys. Ready to go here?
Sure.
All right. Hey, folks. Welcome to another edition of the Know Mind Podcast. Your host, Mitch Maxine. As always, if you have any comments or questions, put them up on my Facebook page, the Know Mind Podcast Facebook page, or drop me an email at knowmindpodcast2021@gmail.com. We were going to have an extra guest on this week, but he got the times mixed up, so maybe next time. So we're stuck with the same old crowd that we usually have. Bob, how's it going?
Oh, here I am again.
You know, when you do that, it makes me want to just, like, not have you on anymore.
Hey, here I am again. This is great.
Oh, for God's sake.
Thanks for the opportunity. I'm just joking. It's fun to be here and it's fun to be on.
Fuck.
Blah, okay. Blah, blah.
Way to entice the new listeners. Darren, how you doing, brother?
I'm ready for some serious entertainment, so that's nice. That's what I'm here for.
I'm here to be entertained. Entertain me. Len, how you doing, brother?
I've missed you guys. It's been 2 weeks.
Aw, Lenny. Aw.
I also feel like we're a panel of Fraser Cranes here, saving the world's problems one podcast at a time.
We're listening.
Okay, kind of a special edition of the podcast this time around. I got an email from a gentleman, and I'm hoping I pronounce his name correctly. Keith, the last name is pronounced, I believe, Wozajacek. So Keith Wozajacek dropped us an email, said he listens to the podcast, loves the dynamic, asked us a bunch of questions. So tonight's podcast is going to be exclusively addressing and answering the questions that Keith posed. So Keith, appreciate you listening, man. Please spread the word. And if you have any more podcast ideas or questions, keep sending them in.
Yeah, Keith.
As Lenny said, we're listening. So that indicates we are. You've asked questions. We're listening. We shall answer.
He's a bunch of questions. It's good.
It is, yeah. And like we've said before, if anyone actually wants to come on the podcast and talk to us, we're more than happy to have you on. So keep that in mind.
We're more than happy to prove you wrong.
You will have to be able to sing the theme song for us, though.
That's true. On three. One, two, three, go! Not even close. I'm thinking once we get really good at that, I'm just going to substitute that in for the theme song instead of the actual one.
I broke into the carnival merry-go-round theme.
Exactly. All right, so let's get into this one, guys. Cool. So these are a bunch of not really related questions, but interesting ones nonetheless. So let's start with the first one. Keith's first question, how does gender play into our perspectives on training? And the example that Keith gave is a lightweight lady and a heavyweight gentleman both test for their black belt, both achieve their black belt, but when pitted against each other, he has a clear advantage because of his size. Does this diminish her grade? Does it elevate his? Or does it make a mockery of the entire grading system? Anyone want to take a run at that?
I'll go first.
Oh, damn it.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Go ahead.
I mean, the easy answer to this question, I won't go philosophical or anything. The easy answer, it's why they have weight divisions in boxing and MMA. It's just you can be as good at the art or as good at whatever it is, your perfection of the art, the techniques, even your strength and everything. It just goes with your weight, gender. I don't even think gender comes into it. It's just your weight class. To me, that's the simplest answer.
So let me ask a question. Sorry, Bob. I'm sorry, Bob. I know you've got something to say. I just want to ask a question based on what Darren said, because this has come up a couple of times. This question and Darren's answer all revolve around the practical application of martial arts. But so many karate clubs cut their teeth on advertising that it's not about competition, it's about self-improvement. It's about being better than the person that you are, not being better than the people you compete against. How does that weigh in your perspective on rank and how people get promoted?
It doesn't make a bit of difference, does it? I mean, the small lady can improve and therefore get a higher rank, and is still not in the weight class of the big guy, so they're in entirely different universes as far as all their training is concerned.
So, Bob, are you saying that promotion and advancement through the martial arts is or should be exclusively based on self-improvement as opposed to comparative improvement?
Oh, my God, no. I think competition is essential.
Well, even even just to get out of the competition back, because I think Bob touched on it, it's an individual thing. So if you're improving, but you still have to improve at the level that's designated. It doesn't matter the gender. If you can't perform the techniques, then you're not going to improve. So it's not necessarily that you're improving, therefore you get the next rank. It'd be one of those things where how much do you give someone the next level if they're not matching at that level? Do you know what I mean?
That brings up a good point, because Mitch and I often compare martial arts training to learning how to play a piano. And that's just an example that we use. And it's very helpful, because when you're learning how to play, the tests are objective and you can either play them or you can't. It's not just a matter of, you know, have you improved since last month? It's a matter of whether you can play what's on the syllabus.
The problem with that, though, Bob, is that it's
I like that analogy. I've never heard that before. I like that.
I kind of hate it, because it's very... If I put a piece of music down in front of somebody, it's very obvious how that piece of music should be played. There are a specific length of each notes, there are time signatures, all that stuff. And if they play it the way it's written, they have that level of ability. But there are so many subjective things when you're judging a martial arts student relative to their advancement that aren't nearly so clear cut. There is so much subjectivity involved. If we talk about improvement being based on self-improvement, okay, you did this block this well a year and a half ago. Should I be looking at how well you did it then compared to how well you did it now relative to whether you should be getting your rank or not? That subjectivity is a part of it, no?
I think you might be a little off when you say that learning how to play the piano isn't subjective. There are good players and bad players, even though they're playing the same music. And there's a lot of stylistic differences between different players. There's a hell of a lot. I'm sure that if you ask any real piano player, there's a ton of interpretation. There's a ton of technique differences, very much the same as in our martial arts.
I don't know that that's true.
Let's ask Darren and Lenny. They're musicians.
I was just going to say it is true.
And I was going to go to Lenny, because Lenny hadn't said a bloody word so far. Len, what do you think?
I totally agree with Darren.
I love Lenny's preamble. Every time he starts to say something, it's, oh.
It just shows I care so much.
That sounds like Lenny's Saturday night dates. I care so much.
Same shit, different Friday. I couldn't agree more the whole weight division thing. But where I get conflicted over this, okay, your black belt is supposed to be the epitome of your training, and if two people are training, say, in the same style, okay, physicality is going to take a huge, huge element of who's going to be dominant in it. But surely part of being a black belt is being able to handle yourself against, not all aggressors, but being able to adapt to that. Okay, if a bigger guy attacks me, I got to try A. But if a smaller guy attacks me, I got to, you know, don't have to be physically as strong, but I adapt to it. Case in point, when I was a brown belt, I was put in sparring against a fourth degree lady black belt, who took exception to how hard I was sparring her and called me an animal. But she followed that up 10 seconds later with me holding back with a roundhouse to the side of my head that was kind of, hang on a second, you're sparring as hard as you can. So I hit her back on it, and again, had a hissy fit over it. And I'm thinking, at that stage, I was going, I'm a brown belt, you're a 4th degree black belt. Surely you should be some kind of knowledge or skill base that you can adapt to a bigger aggressor. That's
but
where
see,
I get very conflicted over in that aspect, because I'm looking at practical application.
But see, that's taking the notion of advancement and putting it in a competitive comparative framework. I'm not sure that's, I don't know, it's a tough question. How much should your ability to defend or fight someone else factor into your advancement? Bob,
these are martial arts. This is the definition of it.
Let me ask you a question, Mitch.
Yeah.
Say, for argument's sake, you were going for your showdown grade, and somebody else who's not necessarily female, but someone of an incredibly different weight division of you also goes
okay.
the same way. And you get out and you end up sparring the same people, and you have to bust your ass against heavyweights, this, that, and you're the same person gets out and they fight to the best of their ability, but both of you are awarded the black belt at the end of the night. When you know you physically pushed yourself harder on the night, does that make you not feel a little bit kind of, well, shit, they got an easier ride here?
You know what?
Oh, don't get us started on that.
This is a whole
well,
kettle of
very,
fish.
I think it's very relevant to that, because the last line of that question says, doesn't make a mockery of the grade system, and that's the elephant in the room here.
It's true, because so much of a martial arts, or my experience with martial arts grading systems, there's defined criteria that you have to meet in order to move through the rank, but there's so much that's subjective. I mean, look, I don't think any of us have ever gone through a black belt grading on any rank level that didn't involve fighting other people or self-defense against other people. So, of course, there's a comparative component to it. I'm just not sure how much that comparative component should weigh in the decision of whether someone passes or not.
Well, a typical self-defense part of a grading, it doesn't matter if a small person is defending themselves against a huge person, the weight is not of an advantage. I mean, he attacks and she does what she can. It's how much effort she puts into it, how much technique she shows. It has nothing to do with whether she can hip throw the guy or anything like that.
Where does it say that in your syllabus, though, Bob? I've never been in a club or a class over the years and someone say, listen, guys, this is fine for someone equal weight to you, but it's not no use to you for a heavier aggressor. Let's see what you can do.
That's not what I meant.
Okay, sorry, like, maybe I took you up wrong there, sorry.
Let's say a 100-pound lady is going through a self-defense part of her black belt test, and we put up a 200-pound guy attacking her. Her ability is going to be gauged by what she does and how well she does it. In a karate self-defense situation, she can do what she can and as well as she can do it, and we can gauge how well she does it, whether or not she can throw the guy, whether or not she's, you know, can lift him. That doesn't have much to do with how we would view her performance, right?
Okay, guys, we've drifted a bit off the question because we're now into rank comparisons and how we're judging people relative to their promotion. Let's go around the table once and talk specifically to the question, which is, how does gender play into your perspective on training? Darren, what do you think?
For me, it doesn't play in. I think you do it to the best of your ability, size, stature. Now, there is certain things that, let's say you're hugely overweight or something, or you're inflexible, you're not going to perform it the same as anybody else, but you will have areas that work better for you. And again, when you watch MMA, you'll have a guy that's long and lanky, he's better at submissions. You'll have a short, stocky wrestler, he's better at taking you down and grounding pound. So both of those guys are capable of winning the fight. If they were both performing a kata, one might look completely ridiculous and one might look really good. But in the actual fight, they're almost equal despite size and disparity in length and reach and all that kind of thing. So I think as long as you're performing it to the best of your ability, now that's not getting into all that other thing like what is the criteria for this, but in general, as far as gender and stuff like that, I think long as you're doing it good as required by the rank, it doesn't matter whether you're male, female, large, small, lanky, anything like that.
Darren's going to highlight it a bit there. It's not somewhere, I know the question specifically said gender, but I think maybe that was it Keith is the guy's name?
Yeah.
Maybe he kind of digressed a bit in terms of physicality more so than actual gender, because you got a lightweight guy and a heavyweight woman is going to be swinging her favor. So, absolutely. I think definitely in my mind, physicality and fitness has a massive factor. Where I get conflicted about it is when you get to the whole thing of not, does it make a mockery the same grade as either deserving of the same promotion? And that's where I get totally head mush. That's all I got to say on that one.
Bob, what do you think? Gender specifically.
I desperately hope that a man and a woman of this equal weight will be judged equally on their performance. I think that any self-respecting feminist would agree whether difficulties enter into it, whether I'm a little bit off on that. I think we should start with that as the premise. I think that that's the starting point that we ought to begin with and aim at.
I tend to agree. When I get in front of somebody, when I'm sparring, if I get in front of somebody, they become this nebulous form in front of me. I don't see gender. When I'm in a teaching mode, I have to see rank. But if I'm at a tournament, I don't see rank, I don't see gender, I see this person in front of me. And that's how I perceive people in the dojo as well as on the competition floor. I was going to go into a little bit of a diatribe about how there are some techniques that have to be performed differently by women because of their physiology, but I'm going to back off of that. I'm going to say that there are different techniques have to be performed differently by different people of different physiologies. I don't think gender plays that much of a role in the ability to do technique and the ability to dedicate yourself to the concepts of the martial arts and how you perform on the dojo floor. I have fought in tournaments with women who were absolute animals compared to some of the guys I've fought, and vice versa. I've fought some guys who were absolutely insane too. So I really don't see gender as a significant factor in my perception of people and their involvement.
Can I add on to that? I was just thinking that we never even touched on it, but it seemed that, like, he was talking about the gender as in, as far as the size difference and everything. Are you going to deny a 16-year-old a black belt because he's small and you can kick the shit out of him? Or is that guy the best 16-year-old there is? You can't say a 16-year-old is not entitled to a black belt. He's well above all the other 16-year-olds. He's done all the techniques. He's winning every tournament. And he's earned his black belt. But obviously, an adult can beat him up. So does that make his rank any less deserving?
Isn't that a weight class issue again?
But that's kind of what he said about gender, wasn't it? It's part of the question. Like, you're talking about a large man and a small woman.
He did specify in the question a difference between a heavyweight guy and a lightweight woman. But look, there are...
What about a heavyweight woman and a lightweight
against
man?
A lightweight guy, exactly. That's the point I was going to make.
I think gender means absolutely nothing.
Like, exactly. I think gender is irrelevant. I think weight 100%. Divisions and all that stuff matters. Now, I might get roasted for saying this, but I can definitely point out anecdotally some differences between male and female perspectives on the dojo floor. I don't know that it's worth going into. I think men and women are different creatures and approach things in a generic way differently. And I've been called out by some of the female students that I've taught over the years for not paying enough attention to those gender differences.
This brings up the whole, like in the UFC, there's men and there's women. It's an entirely different ball game. And so that kind of puts a lie to what we've been saying.
No, it doesn't. It's making them both equal. As far as the rank, they're not going to fight each other, but they're still deserving of the rank.
That's the thing.
UFC, any martial art, boxing, judo.
Well, that's what I meant.
Like, taekwondo, it's across the board.
We're talking about MMA. So when you say UFC, we really mean MMA, which
I know.
Martial arts.
Before we move on to the next question, anybody have any final thoughts on this?
Mitch, you made a statement a few minutes ago, and you said you're not going to go into this. But normally this podcast, we do go into it. Now, I know it might take us off subject with the whole perspective of male, female on the floor, but you may have listeners sitting there going, no, please do. So maybe you should divulge into it a little bit.
You know,
or is
what?
That just going to drag us into a different podcast?
I'm happy to do it. Just it's gonna take some time to go into, and it's going to cause a bunch of conversation, which is fine, but it's going to pull us off topic. So
put it on the menu for another podcast.
Exactly. We'll mark that down. Let me write that down. Podcast topic, men versus women perspectives on the dojo floor. We'll talk about it another time, but...
Statistically speaking, more men are stronger than the women of their same weight class. That's going to be controversial for some, but non-controversial for others.
That's not controversial at all. I think generically, that's true, yeah.
So that is a statistic that we shouldn't be concerning ourselves with when we're teaching, when we're judging somebody's performance on the dojo floor.
Exactly.
Right.
That almost answers your man's question there right from the start, even just what Bob just said there.
Okay, let's go on to the second talking point. Trans athletes. General thoughts on the notion of trans athletes competing as the gender by which they identify. Now, I think we can all agree that we've already said that when a student comes in and hits the dojo floor, gender's irrelevant. So in terms of training, in terms of coming into a dojo and working out, can we all agree that what gender somebody identifies as is irrelevant? They just come out and you train. Exactly. I don't care.
The only time it matters is what bathroom they use or change room.
And that's not what we're talking about, although...
I don't even care about that. Like, nowadays they have... What do you call it? What do you call the bathrooms where it doesn't matter?
Gender neutral. Yeah.
Gender neutral bathroom.
Who cares?
I'm looking forward to Lenny's perspective on this because he probably deals with this issue more than anybody else here.
So Len, just to frame the question a little more, we're talking about trans athletes in competition, obviously by weight division and that sort of thing, competing as the gender by which they identify. So you have a guy who identifies as a woman and wants to compete with women, or vice versa, a woman who identifies as male and wants to compete against men. General thoughts. Darren, you go.
Do you know how many jokes I've seen, WhatsApp messages and stuff like that, where they joke around, it'll show some guy, he's been a guy all his life, but he throws a wig, and he's lost every bicycle competition he's went in, he throws a wig on, identifies as a woman, and now he's winning all the tournaments. You know what I mean? It's like, what are you trying to get out of it? Like, it's an individual thing. Do you just want to win, or do you want to win knowing that you actually won? So that's the first thing. The other thing is, I don't care what you identify with. There is the fact that this is what you are, and that's the category you're going into. That's the same as me going into a tournament where nobody knows me and saying I'm a white belt, and then winning first place and being all excited for it. It's like, well, what are you getting out of that?
The thing is, look, to be fair to the question, I think it's a little more involved than that. Let's keep the framework of the question focused on individuals who are not just looking to take a trophy home, and they want to, they're going to say, I want to identify as a different gender just so I can win. Let's keep the conversation focused around people who are legitimately feeling that they were born into a gender that they do not identify with.
Unfortunately, you went to the competition with the gender you are in, not what how you feel. That's just the way it is. It's not to put anybody down. It's not to say that you don't identify with it or you need help. None of that. It's just that's just the way it is in competition. You have to do it with what you are. That's the way they do it in the Olympics. It's just the way it is.
I'm going to throw an addition to that one. Maybe it's time that now we step back and say, okay, now we have different divisions. You've got your male division, you've got your female division, and now you've got your trans division, and that's split into
Boys who identify as women and girl because that identifies as a guy going against a guy identifying as a girl. Is that your trans division?
This is when the whole Paralympics come in with different grade divisions of sight division.
Trans is the same as Paralympics. I think we're gonna get some emails about that.
That's not what I said. What I'm saying is, maybe it's time to re-examine it because it's something that's coming more to the fore now, and it's kind of causing headaches. So the analogy I was using towards Paralympians was somebody may have amputation in the leg, and someone may have an amputation in the arm, but they're not going to be the same division because one obviously has deficiency in the legs, one has arms. So you have to adapt different divisions.
I'll tell you the flaw in that perspective, Len.
I'll tell you many flaws.
Well, yay, the can of worms is open.
The first one is that a man who identifies as a woman does not want to compete in a division where men identify as women. He wants to be perceived and treated as a woman and therefore wants to compete against women. So to say, you can't do that, but we're going to put you in this little pile over here, they're going to look at that as being, I don't know what the word is.
Pigeonholing them.
Yeah, exactly. Pigeonholing them or not giving due respect to their gender identification.
But in the same way that they have different weight classes, this sort of sounds like they ought to have different testosterone level classes.
I thought about that. My first question when Lenny said it is like, Jesus, so I've been to tournaments where it's a legitimate category and there's only two people competing. So there's no competition. You don't even have enough for a third place person.
Right.
You go to a tournament and you try to do a transgender category or something like that. Don't even have enough sometimes for some of the traditional categories. So you add a transgender category, you might have one person in there.
Yeah. That's a perfectly valid point.
But you know, outside of that, Darren, if you have somebody identifying as a guy identifying as a woman going into a women's category where they're physically obviously of a massive advantage because of their original physicality, that's not a level playing field. No more than two people in one division is a level playing field or a true justification what should go on.
I mean, here I got nothing against the idea. It's just it doesn't work. Maybe if you went into a world class tournament where there's 1,000 competitors and they have a division and you go in that division, that's fine. But in just the regular scheme of things, it just doesn't work.
Whatever you need to do as a person to find happiness in this fucking messed up existence that we all have to lead, more power to you. As it applies to how you compete, I am on board with what Darren said. unless you're going through some pretty serious hormone treatments and can demonstrate testosterone versus estrogen levels, you compete in the gender you were born in. Look, it's not my job. Okay, I'm going to catch some shit for this. Yeah, it's not. It is not my job to validate your perspective on yourself. If you want, if you were born male and feel you're female or vice versa, look, I'm not going to argue that. But if you're going to stand up in front of a set of judges in a competitive field, and kata we're not talking about, we're talking about fighting, and say, look, I'm born a guy, but I feel like I'm a woman, so I'm going to fight against women, I'm sorry, I think that's borderline insanity. It's not our job as tournament owners to validate your perspective on how you perceive yourself. If you were born male, you're a male. If you were born a guy, you're a guy. You got to compete against the guys. I'm sorry if that flies against your perspective of how you perceive yourself. It's not our job to validate that. It's our job it's our job. Sorry, Len, just one more point. Yes, it's our job to keep the playing field as level and fair as possible without kowtowing to each individual's perception of themselves.
What about the person who rocks up who's gone through full gender transformation?
Even if you undergo hormone replacement therapy fully, there's still issues like bone density and musculature and all that sort of stuff that lingers for years, if not for the rest of your life. So there's that whole aspect as well, and it's just crazy complicated.
I don't know. I don't know how to resolve this question. I don't even know what my perspective is on it in the end game. So,
and when you get right down to it, you take 50 guys in a sparring division. Their hormone levels are completely different from each other. So how do we go about sorting that out?
And that's a good point. Like, you could have a guy who is born, and we all know that hormone levels in various individuals varies from person to person and gender to gender. You could have a guy with, I don't know how testosterone levels are measured.
Don't talk to me about testosterone. I'm 61.
But you could have somebody with a very high testosterone count who's male and another male with a very low testosterone count. What, should that low testosterone count not compete with men and compete against women? Bob's right. This is a minefield of a conversation with no easy resolution. And I don't think any of us...
And unfortunately, we have to have an easy resolution. When you split people up into divisions at a tournament, you have to make it simple.
And I think for our perspectives, if you're born a guy, you compete with the guys. If you're born a girl, you compete with the girls. And we just deal with the fallout as it goes. Okay, we're moving off this topic. Once around the table, final thoughts. Darren, anything to top this off with?
Yeah, no, I think everybody kind of covered the different opinions and perspectives and everything. And in fairness now, this went back, I think it was before the pandemic. There was a guy that went through the whole change and everything, and he was fighting in legitimate MMA tournaments as a female, and he was winning them. So, like, this has actually been covered on Joe Rogan and various other podcasts. So it's not new, and maybe that's why your man was looking for our opinion on it. It's almost a no-brainer. It's like, look, this is the tournament. This is what you have to do. I'm sorry. Now, in fairness, the person that was competing had gone through all the changes and all the hormones and testosterone. So they were essentially a female at this point. They're still, their bone density, as Mitch was saying, they were still winning the fights by strength. Now, as it turned out, their skills weren't good enough. They got beaten later on. So it was kind of irrelevant. But if they were, like, top-notch, then they're going to be stronger than the other people. So it's a difficult one to do. There's no right or wrong answer, but as Mitch said, provincially and the average tournament, now it's a no-brainer.
Bob, last comments? None? Yes? No?
I want to see a person who was born a female compete with the men.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
How many times does that happen?
Exactly. I wasn't going to bring it up, but since it's been brought up, I see lots of examples of male to female trans athletes wanting to compete against women, but I don't see a lot of female to male trans athletes.
But if you did, wouldn't you give them a standing ovation?
I would because you know what? I believe that. I like, if you're willing to stand up against men and compete when you were born a woman but perceive yourself as male, kudos to you, because that's commitment. I believe that.
I know we already have my last thought, but if the whole, I thought the whole idea of competition was to see where you were in your skill level. So if I'm a guy, it doesn't matter whether I identify with a girl. Do I see myself as a skillful person because I can beat all the other girls? Like, is that not the idea of competition? Is to test your skills. So where am I getting any kind of kudos if I test it against females, even though I identify as a female, regardless of what changes I may have gone through?
We go through this whirlwind of what about this and what about that, and in the end, my final comment is I'm just world weary of the entire issue. I just hang my head.
You know what?
I was just going to say, it's a bigger fish to fry for people of more higher authority than us.
It's that's the thing, Lenny, it's not. We are the people, not us specifically, but all of us, all people in the martial arts are the ones who get to frame this conversation and get to have a say in this. So I don't want to pass the buck because it's an important conversation.
Fair point.
And it's an important conversation for everybody to have. So let's move on to the next talking point. This is one that I'm really actually quite interested in, because I get the impression that Darren and Lenny have a much more competitive-based perspective on the martial arts than Bob and I do. But let's explore it a little bit. So, which do you prefer, point sparring versus actual contact sparring? Does one lend itself more than the other to being a more legitimate expression of the martial arts?
I'm an old motherfucker, and I remember the 60s. And I'm in love with the way non-contact tournaments were held back then. Full fucking power was put into their points, and if it wasn't, they didn't score. People were injured all the time because people, didn't pull their punches enough or whatever. That was the golden age, as far as I'm concerned, of point sparring. And ever since the introduction of padding, and I don't know whether it was the beginning of woke culture or what, but people who just touch with a finger and score a point was the beginning of the end for me when it came to
Bob, the golden age that you describe, isn't that just semi to full contact under the guise of point fighting?
No, I'm not saying they had to make contact to score.
No, but they did.
It was accidental. Those were accidents. They, for all I know, may have been had a point taken from them for that. All I'm saying is the amount of power you put in when you break four concrete blocks is the amount of power you should be putting into your technique in point sparring.
Nobody does. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I completely agree with Bob. When I'm reffing at a tournament, and I'm especially in the adult brown black belt divisions, I'm not going to give a point for someone who touches somebody else. Your technique has to be full speed, full power, and controlled. Look, I think it takes more skill to pull a full power punch than it does to actually put it in.
And wait a sec, those listeners who don't exactly know much about martial arts in general, you don't mean pull your punch. You mean it's at full extension and full power. It just doesn't reach the target.
Exactly.
Because you deliberately are a little too far away.
Exactly. I'm deliberately not making contact with my punch, but my extension, my power, my focus, all that stuff is maximized. I think that takes more skill than a full contact fight does.
So, anyway, I'll finish my point. That kind of point sparring is lovely to me. Contact sparring has exactly the same space in my heart as the fully committed point sparring. So, you know, what, six of one, half dozen the other to me. But point sparring these days, fuck it. I'm sick of it. I've thrown my hands up decades ago. It's one of the reasons why I don't mind being retired from this whole thing.
I pretty much agree 100% with what Bob said. When I first came over to Ireland, I was introduced to continuous sparring, as they call it. And you have the pads and the gloves on, and you're supposed to make contact. You're still pulling your punches. You're not allowed to knock somebody out, but you are allowed to hit the guy, but you have pads on, they have headgear on, it's not really hurting anybody, but you are making contact, which kind of semi-legitimizes your techniques. I took to that, and I really like that aspect of it, because there was a lot of time I remember growing up and sparring, and not growing up, I went away and then I came back, because I got into full contact for a while. When I came back to the club, I remember getting chastised, and you made contact there, you're disqualified. And it's like, come on, I barely touched him. Nope, this was no contact. And I kind of dismissed it, and I thought, well, this is ridiculous. But I can appreciate what Bob just said about the old school, where everything went into it and stopped just short of punching the guy, and there's an art to that. So I'm of both minds. I like the contact, but not full contact, unless you're legitimately into full contact, and that's what you're doing, like a kickboxing tournament or whatever.
Okay, so I think both
have their place in a tournament. So if you're doing continuous sparring, like I've been to tournaments where they have continuous sparring and point sparring, and you can go in both or one or the other, whatever your forte is. But at the same time, the point sparring nowadays is ridiculous. And I'm with Bob on that. I kind of wash my hands with it. I'll go and I'll judge and I'll score points and I'll do it, but I'm not impressed by what's going on.
Darren, you used an interesting turn of phrase when you said contact but not full contact. And I'm not quite sure what that means. If you're not putting full power into your strikes, you are.
Like there's some tournaments where if you just touch the guy in the face, that's contact. And it's like, no, I pulled it perfectly. I have a glove on.
That is exactly what you just said. You have a glove on. He has a helmet on. So you're like 3 inches away from his head, and yet you still make contact.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. So
yeah, okay.
I'm still throwing the full power in, but yep. I am going to make contact, but it's not heavy contact.
Got it.
It's not even
Got
light
it.
Contact by the definition of light contact. But it's just the fact that by the nature of the competition, you are going to touch the person the odd time. I don't think you should be disqualified for that.
It's foam against foam.
Yeah, and there was a thing, I think, in some tournaments they said, okay, if you make contact, that's okay. If the guy's head goes back from your contact, that constitutes contact.
Fair enough.
And I'm okay with that. If I touch you, that's great. That shit happens. If I touch you and your head goes flying back, well, I haven't pulled my punch appropriately.
Lenny, you're probably more involved in competition than any of us. So what are your thoughts?
I came up through a school of the old school, what Bob was talking about. You get on the floor and you went at it. But you didn't actually obliterate anyone. But it was a good full hard sparring. The only protection you had on was maybe a quarter inch of sponge in the back of your knuckles. That was it. And that was made to protect your hands and nothing else. And then points scoring came in, and to me it made us as a club step away from competition for a long time. We had taught all our students the old school way, and I will still teach kids now the old school way first, and then if they go to those tournaments, which they're starting to creep back in, yes, they'll fight that way. And if we go to a point score, strictly point scoring, no contact, we'll spend a bit of time prepping for it. So
hey, Lenny, you're impressing me with this speech. Go ahead.
Now, from the point scoring point of view, I think it has its attributes in that it can help with speed, but that alone and reaction. These guys who are winning titles, this, that, and the other, for basically the speed of tip fight does my nothing. I was at a competition recently, the national championships here, and I watched a guy, a young teenage guy, who was absolutely amazing and threw this beautiful spinning head kick to a guy 3 times in a row. And stopped his shot. He made contact and got warned every time for it. And when I say contact, I'm talking his heel touched off the side of the guy's head. It was beautiful. And what did he do the fourth time? He got so pissed off, he cleaned the guy out, took him clean off his feet, and I went, beautiful, unbelievable. And yet he got cautioned. It was nil all at that stage still. The other guy scored 1 reverse punch and won the gold medal. I'm talking, you got to be shitting me. Because the other guy was clearly the far better martial artist. So for me, I will always teach from day one, old school. If you got to go into a point scoring competition, yes, we'll spend time dedicated prepping for that. But at the end of the day, I want you to be able to punch hard. I want you to be able to kick hard. And if you can control your punch, as Darren said and as Bob said, and if you said as well, Mitch, it's a much, much, much more disciplined and expertise to throw a full force punch and control it. with minimal contact or just short of a target than it is to tip-tap, tip-tap.
And just to say something, I remember back in the day, I haven't seen it in a while because they haven't been in a tournament in a while and they haven't really demonstrated that, but I remember going to tournaments years and years ago. They would be demonstrating the rules of the tournament, and they'd have two guys up there to show what constituted a point or whatever. And I remember watching these guys throw like deadly roundhouse or a deadly spinning kick with the utmost control and just stop so short. And I remember looking at that going, oh my God, that was
amazing. I remember that too. Yeah.
And just thinking, geez, I wish I could do that. And maybe you could do it to a certain extent, but not to the quality they did it. And if you could pull that off, you deserve to win the tournament or deserve the point or whatever it is.
Yeah. I think Bob really encapsulated it when he said the glory days of sparring where it's full speed, full power, control technique, because go to any Southern Ontario tournament now, at least the ones I've been to, well, it's, I mean, COVID notwithstanding, but the tournaments over the last couple of decades, it's moving further and further and further away from that. Watch any of the videos on YouTube about Karate Ontario sponsored tournaments. It's tip tap. It's can I get my hand or my foot somewhere close to them, and they give points for it. It's quite embarrassing actually.
I've actually
embarrassing is a good word.
I've come up with a format now where I've kind of broken away and created a model, not a model, but created a model. But I'm working with a model for competition, and it's great. There's other clubs starting to embrace it, and it's basically 2 minutes in the ring. It's go at it for 2 minutes. There's 2 to 4 judges on it. They've all got a scorecard each, like a boxing scorecard. Every time you see a good score, you mark it and all hand it to the judge, the top table at the end of the day. Whoever lands the more strikes in that 2 minutes wins. None of this.
That's the continuous sparring.
Continuous. Yeah. And I mean, all my students from the age of 5 to sky's the limit, we do all our sparring class to class continuous now. There's no point scoring unless you're coming to competition day and we're specifically told it's a point scoring.
That seems like a really good way to go about it.
You know what? I don't really think it matters in terms of how the individual matches are structured. As long as the quality of the points meet a bare minimum standard, look, Bob and I have talked 100 times about having a tournament where it's 1 point to win, but the point has to be completely unblocked, full speed, full power, proper control, blah, 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 blah. I would love to run a tournament with that as the defining criteria.
With Kia.
Yes, exactly. Complete, full commitment to the technique. It'll never happen. It would be a lovely thing, I think.
Look, how many times have you seen, a really good practitioner that has great footwork, great speed, great technique, he bobs and weaves and everything, and he's just fucking jabbing and doing all kinds of things, and he looks like he's way out pointing the other guy, and all of a sudden the other guy just clocks him with a nice hook and fights over. So, but in a tournament, the better guy, the stronger guy, the guy that was had a goal in mind, he would have been out of the tournament at the first fight because the guy would have scored his 2 points and that's it. Like, if you hit me first in the stomach and I punch you in the nose, but you got me in the stomach first, therefore you get the point. It's like, well, I didn't even feel that in my stomach, but I just broke your nose, but you got the point because you were there first. That's what I don't like about point sparring.
That's tricky because there's a new scoring system that exists in tournaments now where you get a single point for a body punch,
yeah.
2 points for a punch to the face, 3 points for
a kick, yeah.
4 points for a flying spinning kick, blah, 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 blah. I always thought that was ridiculous, but putting in the context of what Darren just said, look, if someone throws a full power, full connected punch to my midsection, I'm going to be able to take that a lot easier than I will a full power punch to my nose.
Are you guys familiar with the Kyokushin style?
Never heard of it.
Oh, Kyokushin?
Never heard of it. Yes.
Kyokushin.
Kyokushin.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, of course.
There's no punching to the head.
Yeah, because you can kick to the head. Those guys are
That's insane. Those guys are nuts. Look, I'll take a full power punch to the face before I'll take a full power kick to the head.
Yeah.
What the hell's wrong with those guys? you're not allowed to punch in the face, but I can do a full power round kick to the face?
No.
And full power kick to the legs and to the body. I've got a sensei training with me now. You've met him, Darren Flavio, and yep, Flavio comes from a Kyokushin background, and he's like hard as bloody nails. For him to come in and watch a kumite fight or point sparring now, it's like drills into his eyeballs. It just upsets him so much.
The thing is, you know, look, I'll argue the rules of a Kyokushin tournament, but I've trained with and I've sparred with Kyokushin practitioners, and Lenny hit it on the head. Those guys are tough as nails, yeah, because they don't block. They just punch each other until someone falls down. Like, fuck. I'm sorry, but fuck that shit. Like,
yeah, because the first guy I sparred, Flavio, was going, hang on a second, my ethos here is don't get bloody hit.
They just wade in and start throwing shit, and whoever hits the other guy in the best place first, the hardest, wins. Like,
it reminded me of that board game where there's two kind of plastic boxes in a ring.
Oh, yeah.
Rock'em, sock'em, robots. Yeah. Exactly.
That's exactly what it was.
Knock his block off.
That's exactly what it is.
Look,
they're allowed to punch to the head.
Yeah, rock'em, sock'em, bro. No punching in the head. Look, those guys, I don't agree with how they structure their tournaments and all that stuff. But if every night you go in there and just wade in and start punching people and you have to take it and learn to take it, that's going to toughen you up. So I get it, but I don't agree with the premise of their tournaments at all. I want to ask you a question just on that. Someone comes up to you and says, okay, you either get to take a full power punch in the face or a full power kick in the face. Which would you choose?
Hmm.
Right. We're all going to take the punch. I don't want to get kicked in the face as hard as somebody can.
Let's compare the diameter of someone's arm to the diameter of their leg.
Like, it's crazy to me. But anyway, so let's move on from the point sparring versus contact sparring to the Olympic question. Unless anyone has any final comments about the point sparring versus contact.
No, I think we covered it really well.
Yeah. All right, so karate was included in the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, Japan. I believe it was it was there. I think it was a demonstration sport. But anyway, it's been excluded from the 2024 Olympics. It's not a part of the Olympics anymore. So let's take this one question at a time. General thoughts on karate being an Olympic sport. Bob.
I'm going to go first. Oh, sorry.
Oh, Bob's first. Lenny. Bob's first. Lenny. Let Lenny go
The only reason I'm jumping first on this was I had a couple of students who were looking to try and get included when it was back at the time. Now, obviously, they didn't make the grade, but what upset me about it was a very, very select representation of karate. If you turn around and said, this is open to the whole global scope of all karate styles to come as an Olympic sport, which I would hope it would be, I'd say, cool, let's go for it. But it wasn't. You had to be registered with the WKF, World Karate Federation. And we all know there's hundreds of organizations out there. So straight away, there's dozens and dozens and dozens excluded. And then within the WKF, you had to be represented of a certain style. Now, I'm open to correction on this, but as far as I know, it was Wadaru, Shotokan, and probably Shitaru. Maybe go, wow. I'm not sure. But other than that, now, correct me, I could be wrong on that, so please forgive me if I'm wrong.
Sorry, Len, just to jump in Canada, it's a little different. Ontario, the province that I live in, there's the Ontario Karate Federation. You have to be a member of the Ontario Karate Federation if you have any hopes of getting to the Olympics. It's not style specific. Anybody from any style can join the Ontario Karate Federation, but you have to move through their dynamic in order to get to the Olympics. So anyway,
carry on. You kind of hit the nail on the head. The point I'm making is, for me, the idea of the Olympics is the best athletes in the world competing for a gold medal. But what they did with karate was it was filtered and filtered and filtered. And it wasn't a true representation of what's out there. And I thought it was a little bit of a disappointment on that scope, because it just left so many out that could have been there.
I have an entirely different take on the entire question. And I've spoken about it before, but when a martial art becomes an Olympic event, it's sullied. It's ruined for me, because when you win, you raise your fists up in victory, and it's all about the high fives and the frickin'
pointing at your coach and, hey, way to go. And that's not what I'm about. I'm a dinosaur. I'm an old man. And I know of martial artists who cringe at that. And I think myself one of them. And it's just a whole, I'm out of this entire generation. I divorce myself from the entire modern civilization where you get applause for performing a kata or you high five after you win a point. I can't take it. I'm just going to retreat into my little bubble and think what I think, and everybody else can go fuck themselves. That's just about it.
Okay, before we go on to Darren, because I do want to hear Darren's point, Bob, you're not alone in that perspective. No one will admit it publicly, but I think more martial artists in their heart agree with you than don't. So for what that's worth, and I've got a lot to say about Olympic stuff. So Darren, what do you think?
I'm of two minds. I think if you're a kid or a teenager, like, I mean, I have no interest in the Olympics in general. There's just nothing in the Olympics that I'm interested in watching. I don't care about it, but I understand that a lot of people do. So I think if you're a kid doing whatever, whether it's shot put, track and field, judo, even karate, if that's what you do and you aspire to be an Olympic thing, what you're aspiring to do doesn't have an Olympic presence, that's a bit of a drag. If it does, then that's good for them. So if you're a karate practitioner and suddenly it's in the Olympics, I think that's great if that's what you're into. For me, I'm with Bob on that. I it's just sullied. Like what version of karate will be in the Olympics?
And that's the point I was making.
And it's so, yeah. Like, how many tournaments have you been in where you watch and two judges see a point, but three judges see a different point? And that's then all of a sudden one guy wins and that's it. And when you go up to a level of the Olympics, Jesus, like, it's so controversial. Like, it just, it, there'd be just too much, like, who's the world champion? Like, who wins the gold when you're standing there and going, well, that guy won, but half of the people saw the other guy's point. And then it just becomes, as I said, controversial. And the other thing, again, is, like, whatever you're doing, like, what is it? Is it going to be continuous sparring? Is it just going to be the standard point sparring? And if it's that, it's like, well, what is that? It becomes, it's not karate. It's not a martial art. It's a form of. So it's a branch of that the Olympics happen to do. And that, to me, that's just one aspect of karate. And if that's the aspect you want to go to, fair play. It's not for me. It might be for somebody else. So I don't disagree with it, but it wouldn't be something that I'd be into.
This is a sore spot with me. I think that karate is better off not being in the Olympics. And just, I'll try and make this as short as possible. As soon as it becomes more important that you win than it is how you win, I think it's a travesty against the whole perspective of the martial arts. And let me give you a quick example. A couple of years ago, I was watching judo. I don't remember the year, but it was a bronze medal match. The two competitors came out on the floor and they started fighting. And one competitor did a throw that was illegal in Olympic judo. And the other competitor was given a half a point. And that other competitor spent the next however many minutes of that match running the clock out. They did enough to not get called for non-aggression or non-competition, but all they did was run the clock out. And then when they were given the bronze medal, they jumped up and down, like Bob was saying, with the fist pumping, as though they won something. And they didn't. I love the concept of the Olympics. Two competitors come in and they compete against each other to the best of their ability and let's see who wins. But what it's turned into is the endorsements and the accolades and the national press that you get for winning is more important than how you actually compete. And when that happens, I think it's a travesty. So I don't watch the Olympics anymore. I applaud the fact that karate is not a part of the Olympics. I don't know what else to say about it. I think, there is one thing I wanted to say. There's a local tournament here in Ontario in the next little while, the next month or so. And they sent out a flyer. I was sent a flyer by email. And at the top of the flyer, there's the name of the tournament. I'm not going to name it. But underneath it, to the right on the flyer, in big block red letters, it says, The Big Trophy Tournament. And I couldn't help but think all you care about is how big the goddamn trophies are. This is what it's degenerated into. Let's go to a tournament and see who can win the biggest trophy.
Do you not remember in the old days when the trophies were taller than the person that won them?
We're back to those days. Like, these trophies are 6 and 7 feet tall.
Yeah, but back in them days, they actually fought.
Not the days Darren was talking about. Like,
okay.
Look, when Bob was talking about the glory days of the 70s, and look, that's when point fighting was what point fighting should be. Anywhere from the 80s forward, it all became about...
In fairness now, I was doing it in the 70s.
I'll name the course of the mass. Late 80s into 90s, we were going full tilt.
I never got a 6 foot trophy, but I got the second place, which was like 4 feet, so it was missing the bottom tier or whatever.
Was it gold?
Bottom pyramid.
It was missing the bottom tier.
Was it shiny?
I never won the first place 6 foot trophy.
I'd like to go on record and say I was disqualified from every tournament I ever entered.
Oh my god. I'm not sure if we should admire you for that. anyway, look.
I've got a little bit more to add about the Olympic question. And it's a judo anecdote, too. I remember a story, and I forget from what decade, and I forget what the details are. But there was a story of a judo competitor in the Olympics who decided, because he was first... And the clear best guy in his weight class decided to fight in the next higher weight class, and was lambasted by his country for deciding to do that. That just epitomizes the whole problem for me, and I just wanted to throw that in.
I'm going to jump to the last talking point because I think this one's interesting. If you could choose two martial artists, regardless of era or style, in their primes, facing off against each other in an actual fight, not in a tournament, who would it be and why? And these can be famous martial artists or martial artists you know personally or that you've just seen. It doesn't matter. There's no window on this question. So if you could see two martial artists, regardless of era or style, fighting in their prime, who would it be?
For me, it would have to be in their primes, Tyson against Ali in a boxing match.
Yeah, I was thinking about Tyson.
Honestly, my narrow little perspective wasn't even thinking in terms of boxing.
Yeah,
I was thinking martial arts, like karate guys.
Yeah, I would say Jackie Chan versus Bruce Lee if you want to go that way. But that would be a two-and-pick.
I want to go back to Tyson versus Ali, like
in their primes.
So phenomenal, Jesus Christ!
Tyson was like I just the other day, ironically enough. I watched a compilation of Tyson's knockouts.
I did as well.
He was a beast.
That guy was... Holy shit. I've seen... Honestly, I'd put my money on Tyson in that.
Have you seen that one video of Ali who dances away from like 18 punches while he's against the ropes?
Oh, that's the thing.
Fuck, that's the thing, right?
That's the thing that really got me
intrigued. Brute force and ignorance versus skill and finesse.
I mean, there's one fight, I think Ali throws 16 punches in 7 seconds or 5 seconds or something like this, and nearly all of them land. And you look at Tyson, if you get him inside, he's going to take your fucking head off with an uppercut. Like,
that's really interesting.
I would love to see that.
Now, okay, here's one for you. Take either of those two guys and put them against a karate fighter.
Yeah, which one, though? Like, 250 pounds? Who weighs that?
But that's it's very funny. Have any of you guys seen the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
And the whole conversation between Bruce Lee he maintained he would leave Muhammad Ali as a cripple, but you can't...
Fucking hell.
The problem is, look, the problem with the whole Bruce Lee, what's the word I'm thinking of, mythos, is that nobody knows... Like, you have second and third hand accounts and blah, blah, blah. The guy died when he was 32 something.
He was an innovator in his time, but nobody really to challenge him.
But that's the point of the question, right?
Like, the point of the question is speculation.
No, I was going to say, I'd love to see, you were talking about put them against any martial artist. So obviously you're thinking heavyweight division because they're heavyweights.
If you put Tyson against Bruce Lee, what do you think?
Bruce Lee is a cripple.
Yeah, I think so too. Look, I'm a big fan of Bruce Lee. I think he was innovative in his thought processes. I think he was innovative.
He literally weighed 145 pounds.
Right. So you take a really innovative, you know, elevated thinking martial artist like Bruce Lee and put him against Mike Tyson? I'm sorry, Bruce. I'm sorry. I think you're going to die.
Bruce was a purist, whereas Tyson's just an animal. He's got that killer instinct.
And you know what? That factors into this conversation.
Massively. So. Massively.
Okay. So, Lenny, that was you. Tyson versus Ali. Darren, what do you think?
If we were going back to what, like, I could pick people that I would like to see fight each other. But mm-hmm. the problem is, when you're talking about people in your prime, even boxing, like, obviously MMA has expanded in such a short amount of time, whereas boxing's had 100 or 200 years or whatever to go. But even though it's had longer time, boxing has progressed in its duration. So if you take Ali and Tyson, Ali didn't box the way people box nowadays. The sport constantly evolves and you get better and better. So it's hard to say people in their prime, because you could take any boxer in their prime from back in the day, you can be the greatest ever in your day, but people nowadays in their prime are just naturally going to be better because they have a better scientific knowledge on it. They have better physical, better cardio.
Darren, you look at the heavyweight division now, Tyson Fury's the best they've got to offer. I reckon Tyson or Ali would kill him.
No.
Okay.
No, it's just the sport evolves. No, that's just the way it is. It evolves.
You reckon Mike Tyson against Tyson Fury would end up in a Tyson Fury victory?
Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I don't know who Tyson Fury is.
I would have thought it'd be
the world heavyweight champion at the moment.
I'm not really a fan of boxing, so I...
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough.
Here, if it was a dream fight going back, I wouldn't necessarily call Brock Lesnar a martial artist, but he was heavyweight champion at one point, and I would like to have seen Fedor Emelianenko fight Brock Lesnar. That would, in their prime, that would have been my dream fight.
Really? Wow. I think Emelianenko
would have killed him. I would have loved that.
If you watch Brock Lesnar's UFC fights, he was big and he could move pretty quick for a big guy. I didn't put much stock in his punching power. Like,
no, not at all.
He had nothing. Like, he was big and he was fast, and if he got on top of you, sure. But Emelianenko, I think, would have slaughtered him.
Exactly.
I heard Brock Lesnar describe.
I wasn't going for a competitive fight. I was just going for a fight that I would have liked to have seen.
Go ahead,
Brock Lesnar was described as, and you're going to laugh at this one, as the ripped version of Butterbean.
You know what? I didn't even think about Butterbean.
Is Butterbean okay? Do you remember that?
That was hilarious. Butterbean versus Johnny Knoxville.
Yeah. He knocks out. Johnny Knoxville comes to and he goes, "Is Butterbean okay?"
That's brilliant. Oh my God. What's all right, Bob. Bob, what do you think?
I admit, when I first saw the question, I started to think about it, and the first one that came up to me, like Lenny, was Tyson, and I tried to think of who he would fight, but I didn't think of Ali, so that was good on Lenny's part. But I'm taking a different angle on this question now, and one of the martial artists that I'd like to see in this fight would be the founder of Aikido. And you guys know, I don't know whether you know
it's
or not, but
Ueshiba, right?
Ueshiba, or whatever, however you pronounce it. You know how much I love Aikido, but that founder guy, he was one of those, 1930s or whatever, Japanese, full of himself kind of guys, and who was convinced that Aikido was the ultimate martial art and could beat anything else, and I would love to put him up against just about anybody who would... who would fucking beat the shit out of him, and it would serve him right. But I love Aikido and all that, but in its place, keep it in its place, Ueshiba.
Who's going to win with George Dillman versus Steven Seagal?
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, jeez.
That's my dream
good one.
Fight.
That's a good one, Lenny.
That's awesome.
No, George Dillman against my kid.
Your kid shows toe face in the wrong direction.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know an interesting thing? I read a book there was photographs of your man in the book, and he was
who?
Whatever he did before
Tai Chi. Shiba, the guy who founded
Aikido. Whatever he did before he founded Aikido, he was obviously an accomplished martial artist. Like, he was huge, he was tough, he was ripped. He was a serious martial artist.
So what? That's a whole different podcast.
That's a different thing. It just reminded me, because I haven't heard that name in ages until Bob just brought it up there. But
Mitch, I haven't heard your pairing yet.
Oh, that's right.
I look at it in terms of martial artists that I admired coming up through my formative years. I would love to have seen...
So me against my dad. In our prime.
In his prime, keep in mind.
Yeah.
Wow. Jesus, Mitch.
Okay, so...
Wow, that's quite the laugh from the son.
I was here, because I knew who'd win that one.
Hey, we got the 50th coming up. Maybe we can make that happen.
I'm pretty sure I'd win out of
Holy crap! I'd travel to Peterborough for that and pay money.
You paid the 75 bucks for that one.
I'd drop 75 bucks for that bucks fight. That fucking hell. In this corner, Darren Bell!
Fucking hell. In this other corner, the ghost of Mark Bell in his prime.
Mitch, have you not got anybody that you like?
Coming up through my formative years, there were martial artists I admired. And I'm going to put it out there. Chuck Norris was one of them. I read his biography. That guy was a tough as nails competitor back in the day. And I would love to see him, only because one of the fight scenes in movies that I was weaned on was Chuck Norris and Bruce Lee in the Colosseum in Enter the Dragon.
Them actually fight?
I would like to see those two actually fight. I really would. I'm a big Chuck Norris fan. Not now, because of the whole Chuck Norris mythos that's been generated. But back in the day, I think that guy was...
Bruce Lee didn't do any contact fighting, right?
They claimed he did.
There's a lot of claims about what he did.
But. His estate claims.
I think Chuck Norris would have beat him in the discipline that Chuck Norris fought in, compared to Bruce Lee's ethos and philosophy.
If I had to take a side, I would agree with Darren, but there's enough about what I've read about Bruce Lee in terms of his training practices and his philosophies, and I think he was a smart guy, I think he was an innovative guy, and I think it would have been a really interesting fight. Chuck Norris is quite a bit bigger than Bruce Lee, so he'd have the advantage in strength.
I was going to say there's a weight disparity.
For sure. But yeah, Bruce Lee...
Wait, Bruce Lee identifies as a heavyweight.
well, obviously he did, because he fought Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as well.
Yeah. He identifies as 8 feet tall, too.
Anyway, look, to answer the question, and this is based on nothing but my childish perspectives on martial artists growing up, I would like to see Bruce Lee fight Chuck Norris, both in their prime, in an actual fight and see what happens. So, yeah. Okay, guys. Okay, guys, last talking point. Do you think martial artists who crossed over into movie making become more of an acrobatic stuntman, and do they compromise their professed and chosen art and give a false representation of that art through what they do on screen? Anyone want to take it?
Isn't that obvious that they do?
Bob, go for it. Go on.
Bob, Bob.
Isn't it obvious that they do? I mean, is it a non-question really here?
It's obvious to me, but let's talk about it.
I was thinking the same thing. It's not really that.
Well, my point on that is I've seen Bruce Lee in movies. I've seen Jackie Chan in movies. I've seen Jason Statham in movies. I've seen Steven Seagal in movies, but I haven't really seen them compete as martial artists.
So look, let's separate competition from movies.
I haven't really seen them do anything else outside of movies.
And that's a good point. Anytime you have a choreographed representation of something, it's always going to be skewed. It's always going to be non-representative of what the actual martial art looks like. So I think you guys hit it on the head. Of course it's misrepresentative of what the actual martial art is or the martial art looks like. And it's entertainment. It's a different animal. It's a different...
Martial arts, a good example on that, which just came across today. I was listening to a radio program, and they were doing a review of movies. I can't remember the name of the movie. It's irrelevant. But there was a female that was in the movie, and whatever the movie was, she portrayed a martial artist in the movie. And she had zero martial arts experience. All the moviegoers thought she was a brilliant martial artist, but she was a dancer, so she had the stretch, the flexibility, and she just, they taught her what to do in the choreography of the movie, and she came across as being like this superstar martial artist, which she had absolutely zero experience in. So that's how movie
Ralph, what's his name, from Karate Kid? He was a dancer.
Macchio.
Yeah, but in those movies, he didn't actually look like a martial artist.
Where's Mr. Miyagi, for that matter?
Yeah, but this chick did, apparently. I can't remember the movie. I don't think I saw the movie. Apparently, she did look really good at what she was doing. So it stems the other way. At least, if you're a martial artist prior to going to a movie, at least you have the skills going into it. So you're not diminishing those. You're not misrepresenting them. You have what you have going in. If the movie requires you to do something that's not realistic in real life or your training, it's irrelevant. It's a movie. It's supposed to be fictional.
But that's the definition of misrepresentation. You can't say you can't say I'm a Shotokan or Chitoru or whatever style practitioner, and then go make a movie and go, that movie is representative of my style. Like Jeff Speakman.
I don't think people do, though.
But I think they do. Do you remember The Perfect Weapon? It was a movie that came out in the, I don't know, 90s or something. And there was a guy named Jeff Speakman who starred in that movie. Speakman. And what's the style, Len? Name the style.
Kenpo.
Kenpo, thank you.
He is not a Kenpo practitioner. He's Jeff Speakman 5.0. Bullshit.
Guys, okay.
Unmute Lenny. We stuck a nerve in Lenny.
Unleash him.
Not a fucking, no. Put him in my fucking dojo. I'll show him fucking Kenpo.
Jeff Speakman's the best.
But if you look,
fucking charlatan.
Oh dear. But if you look up Jeff Speakman, hang on. No, this is important. If you look up Jeff Speakman on Facebook, he's still giving seminars and teaching relative to the way that he thinks Kenpo should be done, and he made that movie. I believe firmly that he thought it was a realistic representation of what Kenpo was. And if you watch the movie, it's every bit as much Hollywood bollocks as every other Hollywood martial arts.
I'm making a fucking noose here as we speak.
Oh my god, Lenny's gonna kill himself on the podcast, folks.
Leave Jeff Speakman
alone,
please.
Are you saying he's not a martial artist, though? Like, he went through it just because you saw a movie and the movie was that doesn't mean
LGBTQ friendly. Hello.
Sorry.
The movie was lame, Darren. Please say the movie was lame for the edit.
No, but I mean, I could go in a movie and everybody's gonna go, oh,
the movie was
ridiculous. But that doesn't mean I never trained or anything.
Look, we can talk about the pros and cons of the style he trained in. I don't think it's stepping too far out of the circle of realism when we say anytime a martial artist makes a movie, the first point of the movie is to be entertaining. And as soon as you take a martial art and make it entertaining, it stops being true to the heart and soul of the martial art you're talking about. I don't think you can get away from that.
And on the other hand, since Hollywood martial arts fight scenes are sort of a contest to see who can be more entertaining. They're pretty bloody entertaining at the best of times. And when they're true to the martial arts, so to speak, that's why you've never heard of them. It's because they're so non-entertaining that if I were to direct a fight scene, nobody would watch it. We'll put it that way. It's because the things that I value are not the things that film goers would want to see.
I agree with Bob. The things that I see at tournaments that I value as that's what it's about are things that would not play well on a movie screen.
That's weird, man.
On that regard, I remember, don't know who I was talking to at one time, but it was somebody that knew Benny Arcides, and they wanted him to be in a movie because at the time he was like world champion and blah, blah, blah. and they got him to audition for the movie and everything, and he did all the stuff, and it was all practical stuff, and he didn't get the role because they said that doesn't look any good, and they're going, but that's what works, but it doesn't look any good, and that was the end of it. Now he did act in a few movies and he was terrible at it, but whatever movie he was originally
the movie episode where Mitch brought up Gross Point Blank.
He had a part in that movie, and the fight scene with him and John Cusack was actually, it was entertaining. Anyway, we're off topic. Sorry, Darren, didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no, I think it was done anyway. Like, that was pretty much it.
Okay, so any last comments on the whole martial arts crossing over to movie thing?
What about that Michael Jai White guy?
You know what? I've got a lot of opinions about that guy. I think he's a good martial artist. I watch some of his instructional videos. I don't disagree with him, but he falls into the same category. Bob, he was one of the guys who had a video in our video thing where he did a scene in a movie where I'm going to take a kata and I'm going to...
Oh, right. Oh, God damn it. Oh,
right,
yes.
Exactly. So this doesn't speak to the skill level of any of the martial artists who makes movies. Maybe they're great, but as soon as you put it on the screen with the intent of entertaining people, forget about representing your martial art.
When you see a cop movie and then you ask a police officer,
of course,
is that a representation, they're like, no, right, nowhere near.
But,
so I think it's the same for any Hollywood
of
movie
course
and
it
any career.
And Rocky is not boxing. It's choreographed to death.
The thing is, does it make it any less entertaining? No. Everybody still likes watching it.
To me it does. I love non-choreographed fight scenes, which is... there's like two.
What about the instance where they took someone who wasn't a martial artist? I'm leaving Ralph Macchiato aside and whoever else was.
Macchiato?
Is that his name? What's his name?
That's a coffee, Mocha, isn't Macchiato. It? Mocha Valente.
Latte.
Ralph, whatever his name is, Danielson. Leave all them aside. There have been certain movies where I kind of stood back and went, you know what? You didn't do a bad job there because it didn't turn into choreographed bullshit.
Name one?
Yo, wait.
Taken. Liam Neeson in Taken.
What? The thing is, wait, hang on.
Who takes guys out? Okay, yeah.
Liam Neeson was not representing any particular kind of martial artist.
Exactly.
The fight scenes are every bit as choreographed and unrealistic as there are in any other martial arts movie.
I disagree. There's only one fight scene in it, and that's at the end. Everything else is him just two strikes and it's over.
That's a fight scene.
No, that's him fucking taking someone down. It's not a fight. Because the other guy didn't get to react.
I've got to
say... Did anybody else see Taken?
Yeah.
Everybody's seen Taken, I think.
So comment.
Oh.
Sorry, the only fight scene is at the end. The only fight scene is at the end.
What's the other one? What was the one with Matt Damon? Did he not do some
fight scenes? Oh, the Bourne movies.
Yeah, they were pretty good.
They were pretty good. Yeah, but equally unrealistic.
Oh, yeah. 100% unrealistic. Holy shit.
Okay, yeah. That's what we're talking about, though. When you put a martial arts fight scene in a movie, it's not realistic. It's not representative of anything realistic.
Again, you go in the octagon, and one guy throws a punch, and the other guy's out cold. But you go into a movie, and people can throw multiple spinning heel kicks that just take your jaw off and keeps going, and he might have a trickle of blood down his nose, and that's the extent of
it. The point I was making about Liam Neeson and Taken is one scene, he comes out of the door, big guy in front of him hits him in the throat with a tray, and the guy's on the deck. Another guy comes up in front of him in the car, kicks him in the knees, slams the door on his head, and he's down. That's realistic.
Look, this isn't to say that there aren't moments in action movies where something realistic might happen.
Somebody gets shot in the head and they die.
okay.
What we're saying is when a martial artist makes a movie, is he accurately representing how that martial art functions in any kind of realistic
way? No, he's thinking of the paycheck.
I have to throw in, and it hurts me to do this, the first dojo scene in Above the Law. That's IKEA.
But that's not a fight scene.
We weren't talking about fight scenes. We were talking about martial arts in the movies. Like,
fair enough. I love that scene, too. Every other scene in that movie, there's one other scene in that movie I actually quite like. When, Bob, do you remember when he's running that guy down and...
Oh, yeah.
And then he beats him up, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he gets up, and this great big guy comes and goes, hey, that's my buddy. That's my friend. What are you doing? And he just throws a lovely, beautiful punch to his solar plexus and drops the guy.
Yes, this is way off topic, but I was witness to... Did I actually do it? I might have punched a guy in the solar plexus, and he started convulsing. It was a weird situation. I didn't know that a blow to the solar plexus could do that. But anyway, that's off topic. All Hollywood. Right. Hey, fight scene.
All right, guys, let's bring this to a close. Let's go once around the table. Any comments anyone wants to make before we bring this to an end? Lenny, what do you think?
I think Keith, who sent in the questions, really, really offered such a broad spectrum of questions tonight and made us really think. That's come up with some really great discussion points. And as usual, it's given us a heap of other points for more podcasts. So thanks, Keith. And get your friends, send in more questions.
Oh, exactly. Man.
Lenny, you just echoed everything I was going to say.
So let's go to Bob. Bob?
Oh, I got nothing to say.
Yeah, I think the same what Lenny said with Bob. On it. Like,
Jesus Christ.
Lenny.
That'll be original Jesus.
I think they each one could have been a topic for like an hour, 2 hours. And as usual, one particular question can branch off to so many other discussions and questions and everything. So it's difficult. Like, Mitch, you're doing a good job of keeping us back in check and go, okay, we're going off topic. We got to get back to this, because you can float off for hours and hours on some of these things, and you have to kind of bring it back into perspective and go, let's just stick with this topic until we're done that and then move on to the next one. So it's fair play to yourself for being able to do that. Fair play for Keith for actually taking the time to inquire about these questions. We hope we answered them. Probably not. But even if it sparked some sort of...
Well, I wonder, is Keith a martial artist, or is he just a joke? So,
you know what? Oh, that's a good question. And I have no idea. Keith, if you're out there, man, if you have any martial arts training, if you want to just come on the podcast and talk, let's do it. I do want to send my thanks out to Keith, because the questions were relevant, interesting, and obviously we just pulled a two-hour podcast out of it. So thank you so much for writing in.
Kudos.
Anyone out there who wants to write in, I promise you we'll address your questions, whatever they may be. I want to thank Bob, Darren, and Len again for coming on the podcast, you guys.
Can I just add, Mitch, sorry for cutting across you. I said a number of podcasts ago, somebody who wants to talk to us, please come on. Remember I said the first person to mail or to message, come on and talk. It's great having people send messages in.
Any one of our three listeners who wants to do that, come on.
But it would be great to have. Look, we come across as an intimidating, crazy bunch. We're like the two crazy lads in the Muppet Show up on the balcony.
I'm pretty sure we're not intimidating.
But Jesus, come on, please, somebody come
these
on.
These drunken louts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not drunk.
Myself and everyone around me.
But I mean, it's great that obviously, look, it takes time to build an audience, and it obviously is building. But it'd be amazing to have someone on with us.
I would love to have anyone who wants to come on to talk. I've asked a bunch of people individually. It's surprising to me how very few people actually want to come on and speak in a public forum like this.
I'm gonna add to that for anybody who's nervous.
Steven Seagal, are you there?
George. For anyone who wants to come on,
monkey.
Let me paint a picture. I'm sitting at home in my back room here. Anybody who might be, you know, a bit kind of hesitant about coming on, going, Jesus, no, I don't know. You just sit at home. You're speaking about. You don't see anyone. You're just talking away, and it's like five or six guys, if that case may be. Or ladies, whatever, sitting in a pub having a chat. Don't be intimidated, please. Come on.
I gotta echo what Lenny said. It's really cathartic just to sit and have a venue where you can say what you believe. And people might disagree with you, but you'll never be ridiculed for what you're saying. You'll never be made to feel less because you believe something different than we do. Look, we've disagreed a lot in this podcast. That's what it's all about. Let's just have these dialogues. I think that's the most important thing. Okay, folks, we're going to bring this one to a close. Thanks again to Len, Darren, and Bob. Again, any comments to the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or again, throw an email to nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. And thank you so much for listening, guys. Thanks again.